She was just 17. Quiet. Devout. A girl from the small Finnish village of Isojoki, who rode her bicycle home from church every Sunday like clockwork, until one spring evening in 1953, she didn't. The next morning, her abandoned bicycle was found hidden in the woods. No note, no struggle, no sign of Kiliki Saari. For months, the entire country searched. Forests were combed, swamps drained. But it would be 5 long months before they found her, buried in a bog, her body carefully covered with branches and stones. The press called it Finland's lost angel. But behind the national mourning was something far more disturbing. Kiliki kept a private diary, pages that hinted at secrets, threats, and someone she feared. And one of the last people to see her alive? A local priest with a history of inappropriate behavior. Yet he was never charged. Why? Was this a tragic case of a young girl in the wrong place at the wrong time? Or was she silenced because she knew too much? So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The Swamp That Kept Her Secret. The sky above Isojoki was already darkening by the time Kiliki Saari left the church service. It was May 17, 1953, a quiet Sunday in rural Finland, the kind of evening where you could still hear birdsong between the ringing of bicycle bells and the hush of a countryside settling down for the night. Kiliki had gone to the Pentecostal gathering, dressed in her neat coat, her blonde hair tied back. She didn't linger afterward. She never did. She had a curfew, and her mother, Hilma Saari, was strict about it. At 17, Kiliki lived a disciplined life. She rode home alone. That wasn't unusual. The roads between the village and her family's house were long, sometimes muddy, and mostly unlit. But people felt safe here, until Kiliki vanished. The vanishing. It wasn't until the next morning, when Kiliki hadn't shown up for work at the local parish office, that her family grew worried. Her mother checked the bedroom. The bed was still made, her nightdress untouched. A plate of leftover cold meat and bread still sat on the table from the night before, uneaten. By mid-morning, concern turned to panic. Her father contacted the police, and by noon, the news had reached every corner of Isojoki. Kiliki was missing. Her bicycle, a black women's model with a leather saddlebag, was discovered just a few days later by a group of local boys. It had been hidden in a dense thicket of trees off the side of the road between Isojoki and her home. The seat was torn, the light broken, the chain off its wheel. There was no sign of blood or a struggle, just silence. Police searched the immediate area, then the entire town, then surrounding forests. Dogs were brought in, canals dredged, airplanes scanned from above, hundreds volunteered. Over 3,000 man-hours were spent in the first 2 weeks alone. But there was no sign of Kiliki. And then, 5 months later, a discovery. The bog burial. On October 11th, 1953, a peat cutter named Arvo Aito Oja was walking along the edge of a swampy bog known as Harjonava. A strange smell hung in the air. He spotted something beneath a pile of branches and moss. At first, it looked like old clothes, but then he saw a shoe, a foot, and then, unmistakably, hair. The police were notified immediately. The body was found only 30 kilometers from where her bicycle had been recovered. Kiliki's body was partially decomposed, wrapped in her coat, and pressed into the soft earth. Her purse, hymn book, and Bible were buried nearby. The autopsy was inconclusive. Her body was too decomposed to determine cause of death, but there were signs of possible blunt force trauma. No evidence of rape was found, but that didn't rule out sexual assault. Decomposition had erased any proof. Some investigators suggested she may have been suffocated. Others whispered darker theories. The murder sent shockwaves through Finland. Thousands attended her funeral. Radio broadcasters aired tributes. She was immortalized in song and poem. The small-town girl with the shy smile became a national symbol of innocence lost. But beneath the mourning was an investigation riddled with inconsistencies. The diary. When Kilikki's belongings were returned to her parents, something stuck out. Her diary. Unlike many teens who fill their journals with dreams and heartbreak, Kilikki's writing was strangely formal, precise. But in the final weeks before her death, a shift occurred. Her tone darkened. She described feeling uneasy walking alone. She noted that someone had been watching her, that she was afraid of a certain man. But who? The diary didn't name names. Pages were missing, torn out. And according to her mother, that was unusual. Kilikki was meticulous. She didn't discard pages. Local speculation exploded. Had she named her killer? Had someone stolen the pages before or after her death? And then attention turned toward one man in particular. The priest-pastor Arne Kirlinen was a soft-spoken clergyman in his late 30s, newly assigned to a nearby parish. He was educated, charismatic, and known for giving long, emotional sermons. But whispers followed him. According to local accounts, Kilikki had attended one of his sermons just days before her disappearance. Some claimed she had been seen speaking with him privately afterward. Others insisted he'd taken a sudden interest in her. Unusual, given her age. When interviewed by police, Kilonen denied any inappropriate relationship. He admitted he'd spoken with her once or twice. He had concern for her spiritual well-being, he said. He insisted he hadn't seen her the night she vanished. But there were holes in his story. Witnesses said they saw a man matching his description on a bicycle near the area where Kilikki's bike was found. A local farmer claimed he saw Kilonen walking out of the bog area 2 days after the disappearance, his boots muddy, his demeanor frantic. The police brought him in for questioning more than once. He was evasive, but no physical evidence connected him to the crime. In 1950s Finland, without a confession or a witness, there was little that could be done. And then, almost as suddenly as the suspicion arose, it faded. Kilonen was transferred to another parish. The case remained open, but no charges were filed. Other suspects Kilikki's murder investigation generated over 3,000 witness statements and 5,000 pages of police documentation. At least 20 individuals were considered suspects over the years. Some were local farmhands. Others were travelers who passed through Isojoki during the time of her disappearance. One man, a traveling salesman with a history of violence against women, was arrested in another city and questioned. He had scratches on his hands and a torn coat, but his alibi, that he was in Helsinki on the day of Kilikki's disappearance, checked out. Another suspect, a known voyeur with a history of stalking young women, lived just 5 kilometers from the site where her bicycle was found. He had no concrete alibi but passed a lie detector test. Over and over again, investigators hit dead ends. But locals kept talking, in hushed voices at market stalls, in church pews and in schoolyards. One name kept resurfacing. The priest. National obsession. The Kilikki Saari case became more than a murder investigation. It became a national obsession. Every few years, new theories would emerge. Books were written. Documentaries filmed. Psychics offered tips. Reporters harassed police with requests to reopen the case. The image of her broken bicycle, her abandoned hymn book, her carefully buried body in the bog. It haunted the collective Finnish consciousness. And yet, no one was ever charged, no one brought to justice. Kilikki's grave became a shrine, with candles and flowers placed by strangers. To this day, Finnish children are taught her story as a cautionary tale. But the questions remained. Who was she afraid of? Why were the pages of her diary missing? And what power, religious, political, or personal, was strong enough to keep the truth buried for decades? Chapter 2. Pages That Never Spoke. The bog gave her back, but not the truth. Even after her funeral faded from the headlines, Kilikisari's murder continued to cast a long shadow over Isojoki. It wasn't just the horror of a teen girl vanishing on her way home from church. It was the eerie precision of the burial, the careful concealment of her body, the missing diary pages, and the quiet rumors of clergy involvement. It was, in the eyes of many Finns, a crime that was solved without being solved, a closed circle of suspicion with no center. But years later, new voices would attempt to pry it open. The inquest that wasn't in, 1955, 2 years after Kilikki's body was discovered, the Finnish National Bureau of Investigation announced they had narrowed down suspects. In an unprecedented move, they claimed to have a profile of the killer, someone local, educated, known to the family, and with a moral authority in the community. The implication was clear. All eyes turned back to Pastor Kailanen. But again, nothing happened. No charges, no trial, no official accusation. Why? According to internal memos later leaked by a retired investigator, the Lutheran Church had intervened quietly. While they did not protect the priest outright, they urged caution, citing the damage that speculation could do to the faith of the people. The inquest stalled, the file was returned to archives, and the whispers grew louder. A forbidden confession? In 1975, over 20 years after the murder, a former member of the Isojoki congregation came forward in a late-night radio interview. Her voice was altered. She used only her first name, Isla. She claimed that in 1954, she had overheard a conversation in the rectory between Pastor Kelonen and another clergyman. According to Isla, the priest said, "The girl was going to expose something that would have ruined us both. Now she never will." The broadcast caused an immediate stir. Letters poured into the station. The show's producers passed the interview to police. But when investigators followed up, Isla had disappeared. Her identity was never verified. No recording of the full interview remains. Yet for many, it confirmed what they already believed. That Kilikki was silenced not just by one man, but by a system that feared what she knew. A shifting Finland. To understand the grip this case held on Finland, one must understand the time. The 1950s were a period of deep cultural conservatism in post-war Finland. Religion was not just personal, it was national. Clergy were seen as moral authorities, almost beyond reproach. For a young woman, even hypothetically, to accuse a priest of misconduct would have been considered scandalous. But in Kilikki's diary, investigators noted several entries that hinted at disillusionment with her faith community. In one, she wrote, "A person in whom I was told to trust has dark eyes that don't see God." In another, written just days before she vanished, "I fear what I know, but God knows more." To the trained investigator, it read like a breadcrumb trail. To the public, it felt like poetry soaked in warning. Yet those entries were never released in full, and the missing pages, estimated to be at least 4 full sheets, were never found. Forensic frustrations. In the 1990s, with advances in DNA analysis and cold case procedures, calls were made to exhume Kilikki's body. Perhaps, some argued, modern forensics could find something the original exam missed, but her remains had been buried in a traditional coffin in an unsealed grave. By the time officials agreed to review the proposal, it was deemed too late. Any usable tissue would have been destroyed by decades of decomposition. Her clothes, however, including her coat and shoes, had been preserved in evidence storage. They were retested for trace evidence. Nothing. No blood. No hair. No semen. Not even soil particles that could conclusively match the murder site. Either her killer had been careful, or someone had cleaned the evidence post-mortem. And that possibility reopened old wounds. Who would have had access to her body before police discovered it? Only someone with knowledge of the search efforts. Someone local. Someone trusted. The bicycle, revisited one, overlooked detail, returned to focus in the 2000s, thanks to a retired detective, Juhani Nieminen, who had worked on the original case. He'd kept personal notes and photographs, including detailed images of Kilikki's bicycle. What he noticed, decades later, was a faint imprint on the saddle. It didn't match Kilikki's clothing. It was larger. He theorized that someone had ridden the bike after her, perhaps to move it deeper into the woods and mislead investigators about the direction she traveled. He also noted that the saddlebag had been opened and rifled through. Nothing was missing, except for her prayer book and diary. Why those items? If the killer was someone impulsive, why remove only the pages and nothing else of value? Unless those items were never intended to be destroyed. Unless someone had to read what she had written first, before deciding what to do next. A town that never forgot. By 2010, nearly 60 years after Kilikki's death, the town of Isojoki had changed. The church had new leadership. The bog had grown over. The children who once searched for her were now old. But her story never faded. Memorials were held each year at the site of her burial. A small museum exhibit was dedicated to her life. In one corner stood her bicycle, reconstructed with original parts, preserved behind glass. And then came a discovery no one expected. A local historian, digging through the archived papers of the Isojoki Church, found an unlabeled envelope hidden inside an old hymnal. It contained four handwritten pages, faded, torn, but legible. They matched the handwriting from Kilikki's known diary. Three were religious reflections. The fourth was different. It read, "I have been called to walk in silence, but I will not lie for him. If he dares to speak to me again, I will go to the bishop. I have written everything, even the part he said no one would believe." The letter was unsigned, undated. There was no proof it was written in 1953, but it was enough to trigger a new wave of speculation. Was this the missing diary confession? And if so, who had hidden it? Church officials denied any knowledge. The envelope had no fingerprints. The hymnal hadn't been checked out in decades. But the damage was done. Deathbed rumors. In 2015, a woman named Sirka Niemi, a lifelong resident of Isojoki, gave a statement on her deathbed to her granddaughter. She said her late husband, a carpenter who had worked on the church, once found something dark in the priest's quarters. He said it was a journal, a girl's. He was told to forget it, that it was not our place, and he did. But he never slept well after that. The granddaughter posted the story anonymously online. It went viral across Finnish media. Again, the police were pressured to reopen the case. They reviewed the files, but with all main suspects deceased and no new forensic leads, they declined to pursue it further. Still, the whispers never stopped, and neither did the questions. Bonus: theories and conspiracies. Was her diary the key? The priest. Theory. The most persistent belief is that Pastor Kilunen, or someone close to him, killed Kilikki to silence her. Her diary may have contained proof of inappropriate contact or threats, the missing pages and her references to someone who should see God but doesn't align with this theory. The church's quiet influence over the investigation only fuels suspicion. The secret relationship theory. Some believe Kilicki may have been involved with an older man, possibly a married one, and had become pregnant. If true, this would explain both her distress in the diary and the precision of her burial. However, there's no evidence of pregnancy in the autopsy, though decomposition limited certainty. The accidental death theory. Another theory suggests Kilicki may have threatened to expose someone, a priest, teacher, or employer, for inappropriate behavior. In a confrontation, a shove or blow could have accidentally killed her. The killer then buried her and removed the diary to hide what she knew. The witness theory. A darker theory posits that Kilicki saw something she shouldn't, perhaps a crime or abuse involving another person. Her diary held that secret. Someone discovered this and acted swiftly. The theory is supported by her own words. If he dares to speak to me again, I will go to the bishop. The institutional cover-up. Several retired police officers and journalists have suggested that the investigation was subtly derailed by church officials or local political actors. Whether to protect the priest or preserve public trust, evidence may have been suppressed, leads ignored, and records buried.